This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
And welcome to your Wednesday, and today is our first day with Wednesdays with Denise Quinn.
I'm here.
Yes, you are. Let me adjust you a little bit there. And we have a lot of fun together.
We do.
And,
we do.
That's why I invited you to, you know, Brent's kind of scaling back a little bit.
Yeah, he's got to make some money.
Wanted to have Wednesdays off. Who knows why? Just Wednesdays. But Wednesdays with Denise works for me.
I think that'll work. No, it's really great to be back behind the KYKN mic, Dave.
Yeah,
I appreciate the invitation.
It's good to see you, too.
Yeah, it's good to be here. I am excited about it. Looking forward to what every Wednesday will bring. There's so much to talk about in this state. We'll never run out of topics.
Never ending. Always. Well, joining us today is Representative Mike Nierman. And we had a very explosive, unstable legislative session this last time. So you were there. So give us a little bit about what went on.
Well, it was a lot of stuff went on there. So we had some new people get introduced to the legislative process. We had some of the old believers out in the Eastern Willamette Valley get involved in politics, and that was nice to see. We had a bunch of people with Timber Unity get involved and circle the traffic and circle the Capitol and cause some traffic problems.
That was amazing.
Yeah, that was nice to see. And we had some of the most impactful legislation proposed and or passed that I've ever seen. So it was a session to be remembered.
So those two groups that you mentioned were actually mobilized by two different bills that were coming through. So let's start with the old believers, the medical moms, you know, that was their kind of the nomenclature, that the name that's been given to them. What was that piece of legislation that activated and all of a sudden sort of woke those people?
Yeah, so that was the forced vaccine bill there.
Yeah.
And so right now in Oregon, you don't have to vaccinate your kids to send them to school. You can have a philosophical or religious objection to do that. And so the bill just pretty simply just took away the religious or philosophical objection. You could still have a medical reason for not doing that, but it was pretty difficult to get a medical exemption. You almost had to suffer an injury first to get that. And it kind of put the authority for giving the medical exemption in the hands of the Oregon Health Authority, so kind of letting the fox guard the hen house.
Unelected
there.
Bureaucrats.
Yeah, so almost ironically, they've hurt themselves. Oregon has a very good vaccination rate right now, even with the exemptions.
Yeah.
Had they just let it go, we would still have our good herd immunity level of vaccination rate, and everything would be fine, and people that wanted to opt out could opt out. Now, everybody knows that you can opt out, and I think that probably the vaccination rate will go down now.
It was very, there was a lot of emotion. There was a lot of heightened emotion with this. A lot of people going down and testifying for the first time, getting involved in the process for the first time. How did that play? You know, you're in the House of Representatives. How did that play? How was that received by legislators, whether they be Democrat or Republican? Was that a surprise to some people?
It was. I think this was Representative Mitch Greenlick's bill.
Yeah.
And I don't think he expected the opposition, and I didn't even expect that it would be that big of a deal there. I was certainly negative on the bill, but it's just kind of a overreach of big government. I didn't expect that it would cause the crushing blow of people coming down the Capitol and everything. And, you know, one little personal thing, too, I got to say is with the people who were against the bill there were very, very generous with little gifts and chocolates and little flowers and thank you notes and everything like that. And that really warms my heart. We focus a lot about all the negative stuff that goes on in the Capitol there. But I've never been treated nicer by a group of people, and it really really warmed my heart.
It was unfortunate to see that there was some smearing going on. That was unfortunate, you know, where they got sort of tagged with this anti-vaxxer label when many of them were not. They just want the choice. You know, when there's risk, there needs to be choice.
Sure.
And I thought that was the way they were treated wasn't necessarily not a good optic.
Yeah, it was. It was kind of a demonization.
Yeah, it was. And these were moms with kids.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. The other one, a new group has formed, hashtag Timber Unity, that came up as a result of pushback on HB 2020. So that there were two rallies that actually came down, but the big one was just before the Oregon 11 exited the building.
Yep.
Now that I worked downtown, that was stunning.
Yeah, it was hard. I made the mistake of leaving the Capitol to go get lunch that day. I had to get the state police to help me get out of the Capitol garage, and then good luck for me to get back in. I just parked my car and walked. But that was a big deal. That was great. The cool thing about that rally is unlike some of the rallies that they have in Portland, this rally, no one was hurt. Yeah. Nobody got milkshaked. Nobody. Left garbage around. Nobody wore black masks or anything like that. Yeah. It was just impacted Oregonians that were standing up for themselves, and it was good to see.
And so it always is shocking to me that, you know, a lot of these, they had to take a day off work. They had to lose a day of pay. They came from all corners of the state. And again, there was some vilification, which is unfortunate. Again, you've got people coming down here literally begging for their jobs.
Yep.
Against people that are servant leaders.
Yep.
They are not leaders. They are not rulers. They are servants. Mm-hmm. And so, again, having everyone come down here, I thought that was massively impactful. And then shortly thereafter, you had the Senate Republican walkout, the second one.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you're on the House side. Your business continued.
Mm-hmm.
So what did that look like for you? What did that feel like?
So one of the things I think that we get a little bit of credit for setting up the Senate for that. So we started reading the bills every day, making them read the bill, not giving them permission to not read the bills. And so that slowed things down and started the backlog there. And then the Senate capitalized on that by leaving there. So I don't know. We were I think to a man in our caucus, to a man and to a woman, we were supportive of the Senate walkout there.
Do you think the rallies, the people coming, you know, the everyday people, constituents coming out and taking the time to come to the Capitol, had an impact on the decision to walk out?
Yes, I think so. I think that they probably had the cake baked a little bit before that.
Yeah.
But certainly it makes it easier if you feel supported.
Yeah.
So I think if you feel like that your constituency is behind you and mm-hmm. you're gonna be okay at the end of the day at the ballot box, I think it makes it a lot easier to do things like that.
And so, there really was a groundswell mm-hmm. of support. I mean, you know, the hashtag Oregon 11 and the support that came pouring out. There was also a side that was really decidedly not happy with it. So you saw a lot of people saying, get back to the Capitol and do your jobs and that kind of stuff. And from my perspective, I felt that the 11 senators were doing their jobs. They were using the one basically last tool they had in the toolbox to represent their constituents.
Yep. And the Oregon Constitution allows that to be done. It talks about a quorum in the Oregon Constitution. So I believe with you that they are doing their job when they're doing that. Yeah.
It was an interesting session. You know, we're kind of doing a quick wrap up again because you were in the building and you have a different perspective on it from those of us who are sort of watching from the outside looking in.
Mm-hmm.
Any just to, before we segue into some stuff that's happening now as a result of that, do you hope that you see more of this kind of engagement with the constituency?
Yes, not just engagement during the session. So during the session is one thing. That's when the damage is actually being done to the citizens of the state of Oregon. But people need to remember that the cake got baked back in November of 2018.
Yes.
And so we need to pay attention. And so we have another session coming up in February, and we still need to go and be active and let people know what we think then. But the cake is going to get rebaked in November of 2020, and that's a big deal. And so if you don't like what the cake tastes like, you need to go and and participate in the baking of the cake. So,
and there's a lot, we'll talk about that a little bit later. There's a lot that, you know, the average citizen, aside from voting, which is extremely important, there's a lot that citizens and constituents can do.
Absolutely.
And I always talk about, it's a relationship. You've got, you know, whomever your elected official is at whatever level, it's a relationship between their constituents and them. It's our responsibility to hold you accountable.
I agree. Yep.
Yeah.
Because you work for us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep. And I think far too many legislators and, you know, city councilors and school board members or whatever, they forget that they are actually servants.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's important. We need to remind them of that from time to time.
Absolutely. We'll talk more with Representative Mike Nierman with Wednesdays with Denise here on Newsmakers. I'm Dave Bourne. I'm 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by our friends at Green Acres Landscape. And welcome back to Newsmakers. Brent is off on Wednesdays now, so we're having Wednesdays with Denise Quinn.
You got DQ in the chair.
Well, you didn't bring any DQ, though.
I didn't bring any DQ, because I actually don't own DQ.
What? Yes. I thought it was.
No, I've been getting that since I was a kid. DQ, do you own DQ? No, do you think I'd be living here if I did?
Yeah, how much? You'd be so rich now. All right. We're hanging out with Representative Mike Nierman. He was in the legislative session, of course, this last time. And
infamous 2019 session.
It's going to go down in history, I tell you.
Yeah. I think so.
Tell us a little bit about what's happening now, because there's still stuff that's going on there.
So the Capitol's a pretty quiet place now, except for one little thing going on there.
Well, it's actually a big thing.
Yeah, a big thing.
Well, it is a big thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the biggest newsmakers of the session was Senator Brian Boquist, and sort of the conflict between him and Peter Courtney, and then the walkout and comments that were made. So there were, you know, there was hay being made of his statements on one side, and so it was a part of the controversy. But recently, his wife, Peggy, published and shared her testimony, and that was about three or four pages of pretty explosive, some of it kind of damning testimony about the culture in the Capitol, what it's like to be a staffer in there, how she was treated, how other staff members are treated. Can you talk a little bit about the culture in the Capitol?
Yeah, so that's a big topic nowadays. But, you know, at least from my point of view, where I sit, and, mm-hmm. you know, we just revised we had our committee on Capitol culture, where revised the rules and all this kind of stuff and all that. And, you know, I think... So certainly the Capitol's not perfect, and it's a kind of a politically charged place, and so there's going to be disagreements and all that kind of stuff. It's also a place where there's a lot of power oozing around, and that kind of gets entangled with sexuality and things like that.
Yeah.
And so I don't deny that any of that happens, and you try to be an adult and you try to keep it to a minimum and all that. But I think for the most part, a lot of this is just Democrat snowflakes that are unable to function, whatever, or just looking for ways to complain and all that.
So, I've seen a lot of breathless pearl clutching, and it seems very disingenuous to me. I don't believe for a second that anybody is afraid of Brian Boquist.
Right, and I don't want to minimize anybody who has been threatened or anybody who has been
sure. But I'm saying in this particular, you're seeing politically coming out.
Yeah, I think that when you have a thing where there's maybe a few problems here and there, and they do need to be dealt with, and they maybe haven't been dealt with very effectively. Mm-hmm. But then all of a sudden everything turns into a scandal and everybody is offended and everybody's threatened and all this kind of stuff for everything.
And that's what I mean. You don't tend to buy that after a while because
nobody really feels like Brian Boquist is going to kill him in the Capitol.
Exactly.
Or I don't know, throat punch him or grab him.
Right. But that's the narrative that keeps coming out. So what I thought was interesting about Peggy's letter, she talks about how it was to be sort of a Republican staffer and the difficulties that she's had. I mean, they've had threats. I think anybody in politics has probably had to deal with threats, nasty emails. Yeah. I mean, death threats, unfortunately, are horrible no matter who they're directed at. They should never happen.
Yeah.
But then trying to deal with that. Again, the Capitol is a workplace. It's just a workplace. It's an office.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. So you're going to have these things. My HR policy is don't be a jerk.
Yeah.
Which if we could keep it as simple as that, just, you know, be an adult.
And it's not really just an office because, like I said, it's politically charged.
Yep.
And if you're selling flower arrangements, you're not going to get people that are upset with you and giving you death threats and all that. But you know, I or calling you a Nazi or whatever.
Right.
So I get that stuff, and it comes through my office, and I think my staff has a little bit of a thick skin because they know that that's kind of where they work and what they you know, and it's not right, and I'm not legitimizing it.
Sure.
But I get that stuff, and I print it out, and I put it on a wall of shame. And you know, that's just part of the job. It's not any reason to have huge hearings or anything like that. Yeah. And I like I said, I don't think anybody truly feels like Brian Boquist is going to hurt him.
So unfortunately, the what came out of the hearings, was it earlier this week? I'm losing track of time on this sometimes.
Yeah,
it just
Monday.
Seems it's been, okay, so it was Monday. The 12-hour notice that he has to be in there to let OSP know. How does, you know, OSP, I would think Oregon State Police, that you guys have a pretty decent relationship with the Oregon State Police. They're there to protect you guys and to work for you. Is that damaged that in any way, or is it?
Although, I think Senator Boqvist maybe self-inflicted some of the damage there, because he was, when you talk about bring bachelors and they better come heavily armed or whatever, that's directed at law enforcement.
Yeah.
And so I think that maybe he owns part of that.
Yeah.
And, I can't emphasize how much the climate legislation is really bad and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, it's not appropriate to threaten police officers over bad climate legislation. So no police officer should die because of bad climate legislation.
I think things just got so heated, kind of rhetoric went over the top on both sides, and we needed to take a cool down and take a break. And, you know, it's unfortunate that those things were said on both sides. So, but just again, being on the outside looking in, the high drama of this session was shocking to a lot of people. It's interesting that I try to follow both sides of the news to see how it's being played out, that you've got a situation that both sides are looking at and how vastly different they're being perceived and reported on.
And everybody's trying to capitalize on everything and everything's trying to snowball. And at the end of the day, I mean, probably Senator Boqvist probably shouldn't have said some things that he said. But on the other hand, there's people that are not really, I don't believe that these people who are senators themselves who should have thick enough skin to be in office and feel like they have a death threat from, they don't feel safe on the Senate floor or something like that. Come on. I just don't know about that.
Do you think as things have died down, it's quieted down. You guys have kind of gone back to your day jobs. The Capitol's quiet right now. There's still staff in there now though, working.
Yeah. Some of them. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Do you think it's just sort of, everyone's taking a collective breath and a sigh of relief and just kind of girding your loins for the short session, which should be dotting I's and crossing T's, which we know it won't.
And at least I can speak for myself as I'm taking a big deep breath and kind of getting caught up on some yard work and, like you said, going back to my day job.
We've got the summer to get through. We've got the fall to get through. So we're coming up on the legislative session. The short session starts February?
Yeah, I think in February. Yeah, everybody needs to stay tuned for that, and you need to be ready because some of this legislation will be coming back. Some of the stuff that we talked about, possibly the forced vaccines, possibly some climate stuff, possibly more taxes, because the Democrats still have a supermajority, and so we need to watch for that stuff.
We do, and you talk about 2020, which we can talk about a little bit later as far as elections having consequences. I'm out on Twitter following hashtag Orpol and Orledge, and I mean, you're seeing, they're very publicly saying the stuff is coming back.
Yep.
Anybody who thought it was dead and gone and buried, it's a little naive and needs to realize that they're going to keep on doing.
To do what we can in the February session. But then I can't emphasize enough how we need to make sure that we get active in November of 2020. That's when the next cake will be baked. And so, like I said, if you don't like the way that this one turned out, you need to participate in the baking of the next cake.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I want to get into a little bit of that. How much time do we have left, Dave, in this segment?
About 4 minutes.
4 minutes? Okay. We can touch on this a little bit, because one of the things we're hearing, people are mobilized. People are ready. We're poised to make change. You know, we've got people that were never activated, a lot of non-affiliated voters, a lot of Democrats are very disenfranchised from the Democrat Party.
Mm-hmm. Hashtag walk away.
Hashtag walk away. Amen. Brandon Straka. Good guy. So, you know, what's your message to people that are looking at this going, whether they're a Democrat or a NAV? What should they do if they feel politically homeless or they're kind of ticked off about what the really gross overreach that happened this session?
So I think that there's a opportunity for them to get involved with the local Republican Party if they want. If the Democrat Party's not meeting their needs, Marion County Republican Party does a great job of picking up homeless, politically lost people, whatever.
It's very welcoming.
They really do. And so and reaching out to them. So that's a possible political home for people. So there's places to go, whatever. And one of the things about the political is it comes and goes in cycles, and you have to be ready for it. And so right now we're kind of in the political winter. There's not much going on. We're all kind of licking our wounds and back in the cave or whatever. But so the next thing will come out will be February, and then the next thing will come out will be the elections. The primaries are in May, and then the elections in October, November. So get ready for the cyclical part of it. And when the time comes to get active, then you need to get active. So
there's lots of ways to connect us too. I mean, the parties, Marion County, let's talk about Marion County because we're in Marion County, has a very good social media presence. The Marion County Fair is coming up. There are booths there. The Oregon State Fair is coming up. You can come out, you can chat with people. You can find out, you know, there's many levels of involvement. You can really dig in or you can, just retweet.
Yep.
Go to hashtag OrPaul and you see something that the Oregon, the Senate caucus puts out, the Republican caucus. Retweet it, reply to it, engage. We need more engagement, especially out on Twitter.
Yep. And educate yourself, too. You know, people kind of maybe make a commitment to do some civics education on yourself or whatever. And there's opportunities to get some of that.
I want to dig a little bit deeper into that when we come back, because that's a way for somebody who really has a head for policy, really has a love for the wonky weeds, is a great way for them to get involved. So we're going to go ahead and take a break now?
No, sure.
Okay. All right. Well, this is 1430 KYKN Newsmakers Wednesdays with Denise, and we will be right back after this break.
Len Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues in the Capital Auto Group studios. Here's Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Just see Denise shaking her head.
I'm not Brent DeHart.
Yeah, I know. And thank God, too. This segment of Newsmakers proudly brought to you by Color Tile of Salem and Sylvan Learning Center. Welcome back to Newsmakers. I'm Dave Bourne. Sitting with me is Denise Quinn with Wednesdays with Denise. Every Wednesday she will be joining us for Wednesdays with Denise. Don't worry, I'll have the intro changed for
okay,
you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you so much.
Yes, you're welcome. Brent DeHart is taking Wednesdays off now.
Good for him.
But he'll be with me tomorrow and Friday as we broadcast live from the Marion County Fair. So come by and see us.
Oh, you're going to have so much fun.
Yeah,
it's
it'll
a blast.
Be great fun. I've done many of them. We'll be at the Polk County Fair as well.
Yep.
So that'll be fun as well. Representative Mike Nierman joining us in studio in the flesh, giving us an update and an inside perspective about the legislator. Yeah, you're welcome.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to be at both the Marion and the Polk County Fair there, so come by, stop by and see me.
Say hi. Yeah, mm-hmm. Definitely. Before we broke, we were talking about ways of people to stay engaged, to get educated, to get active during the sort of the downtime, the quiet, the calm before the storm of 2020. So one of the things I know you're involved with is something called the Oregon Citizens Lobby. So talk to us a little bit about what that is and what kind of level of engagement that brings.
Good. So yeah, so Oregon Citizens Lobby is a really unique organization. So it's just what it says. It's just plain old citizens that are just, you said, kind of politically wonky, capital nutsy people.
People that like to dig into policy.
Yeah, although it's certainly if you're a starter or whatever, it's fine too. But they go through and they read all the bills and they rate all the bills. And one of the things, you know, in Salem, we do thousands of bills every legislative session. And it's just the pile is just too high. You can't stay on top of it. And so one of the things that Oregon Citizens Lobby adds to the process is we rate all the bills as far as how impactful they are. And so the more important stuff bubbles to the top and then the less important stuff bubbles to the bottom. And yeah, you might disagree here or there on some things. But for the most part, then it makes it easier to do that. And then we do scores on, we score the bills, and then how the legislators vote on the bills impacts their score. And so every legislator gets to grade themselves. So they don't grade legislators, they just grade bills, and legislators grade themselves. You can go to their website, www.trackthervote.org, and that has that information on it, or you can sign up to be part of the process at Oregon Citizens Lobby, www.OregonCitizensLobby.com, I think it is.
So what's the lens you guys are looking at these bills through?
So we have five principles. I'm going to make myself look bad. So it's like limited government, free markets, local control, a few others.
Okay, that gives you a flavor of what it is.
So it's kind of a little bit of a conservative libertarian slant on things. Even if you don't agree with that, it's certainly the fact that a bill is impactful is the same whether you agree with it or not. Everybody agrees that House Bill 2020 was going to be very impactful.
Yes.
We might disagree on whether we think it should pass, but certainly there's some value there. So anyway, so you can go there, and that's one way to get involved and to get educated. And if you want to be a bill analyst with Oregon Citizens Lobby, I'm sure they'd love to have you.
I bet they would. I would think that would be a valuable tool, especially from the Republican side, to have that resource. Because you're right, you come in there, just the sheer volume of stuff coming at you guys, you can't go through it all and digest it. So that's got to be really helpful.
Or if you're represented by a Democrat and you think, my guy's a scoundrel or something like that, but you can't really articulate how, this will show you the bills that they voted for and against that are the impactful bills, and they get a thumb up or a thumb down whether they voted the right way or whatever. And so it gives you a way to have a conversation with your legislator.
And I'm glad you brought that up, as far as if you are represented by someone who's not either side, but in our case, let's say you're represented by a Democrat and you don't necessarily agree. Too many people don't go to their town halls. If it's not the party of the person, they sort of disengage from it and feel like, oh, well, I don't really have any say in this. But people actually do. And I really want to encourage if you have a Democrat who is in your district that you didn't vote for, he still represents you. He or she still represents you. You still need to be at the table in that relationship, that give and take.
My experience has been a little bit different. Of any town halls that I do are well represented by the other side.
Are
there.
They?
So I get them in my face all the time. It'd be nice to do that with some of the other ones there. So in the area, we have quite a few Democrats. So it'd be nice to confront them with some of their votes. They really control the process. It's kind of hard to pick on Nierman because I don't really control anything.
Yeah.
And none of my bills pass, or if they do, they're not super impactful bills or whatever. So it's kind of hard to pick on me. But the Democrats, they write the bills and they get to decide what passes and what doesn't. And so it'd be nice to go to their town halls and hold them accountable.
I know. And too often you don't see that. So you're saying you have a lot of Democrats that show up to your town halls.
Yeah, right.
And just to give you a piece of their mind that they disagree with your votes?
Sometimes. Yeah. It's, I mean, and it's all been, for the most part, it's been peaceful and respectful and all that. But that's they come there and they want health care for all and they want common sense gun regulations and those kinds of things. And so I get an earful from them. So
I go to a lot of the town halls. I've gone to Kurt Schrader, CD5. I've gone to Merkley has come down here, Jeff Merkley. And you're right. The audience is predominantly, I would say, 9-1. Democrat.
Yep.
I really want to encourage Republicans to start showing up at these things. We have every right to be there to voice our concerns. I remember being in a crowd at one of Senator Merkley's town halls, and I was one of two people who raised a hand and was talking about net neutrality and being against net neutrality because I understand really what net neutrality is. Mm-hmm. And, it was a little awkward to be one of only two people raising the hand when everyone else is whooping and hollering for net neutrality.
Yep.
But we need to get outside of our comfort zone and really start showing up.
Mm-hmm.
One of the other ways that is a really great way for people to get involved is as a PCP. Now, with the Oregon Citizens Lobby, non-affiliated, anybody can be a part of that.
Right.
PCP is specifically tied to the party, Republican or Democrat. That's a precinct committee person, man or woman. Are you seeing an uptick in involvement, people wanting to get involved as PCPs? Because I know I am from the party perspective.
Oh, yeah. So I think the Marion County Republican Party had about 30 of them
30.
At their last meeting there that are newly hatched political people there. So it's great. And being a PCP, it's great. I describe it as it's like you go to a buffet and you have all these things presented to you and you can get whatever you want. You can take the sliced peaches and not take the cottage cheese or salad or whatever. You can do whatever you want because people have different talents and different gifts and different abilities. And so you can the party will take advantage of those and take what you have to offer to do. And you don't. So people say, what do I have to do as a PCP? And the answer is nothing.
Yeah.
And so then the other thing we're seeing lately is the power of PCPs. So when Senator Winters passed, then there was a convention, and it's the precinct committee people that pick the nominees to be the next state senator.
Right.
And so that's an extremely powerful position to be in. So it's something worth looking into. And if you contact your local county Republican or county Republican or Democrat political party, you can find out how to get involved with that.
It's a good way. And you have to remember a precinct committee person is an elected position. I mean, so you're on a ballot, you need 3 votes. Heavy lift.
Yeah.
3 votes to get on. And you're right. There's many levels of engagement. Basically, the precinct is your neighborhood.
Yep.
So you're going to go out and talk to your neighbors. You can find out there. We have, contact information for people that are Republicans and you want to go out and encourage them to vote. Non-affiliateds, we're seeing non-affiliateds really showing a great interest in coming over to the Republican side. I've seen a lot of Democrats that have been very disenfranchised, disheartened by what's happening. I think you're seeing nationwide. I mean, you just look at the primary for the presidential election.
Yep.
The field of what is it up to 5,700 now candidates, 25, I think, candidates.
Minus
and they're
one.
All trying to out-Marxist each other and see how far left they can go.
Eric Swalwell dropped out, so it's minus one now.
That's like if a tree falls in the forest and nobody, whatever, Eric Swalwell. Okay. But you watch this and I think your average rank and file Democrat is not that left.
Yeah.
So,
right,
when you've got the representation at the national level, and you're even starting to see it at the state level, where it's going very, very far left. So, again, PCPs is a great way for people to get involved. One of the things that got sort of stopped in its tracks with the first walkout was the was it SB 797, the gun bills.
Yeah.
That was stopped for the time being. Mm-hmm. So there is a grassroots group that has come up to push back against
that. Yeah, so you'll see the signs around the freeways and everything, Oregon Pushback.
I see them everywhere.
Yeah, blue and green signs. And so that organization was kind of to push back against the gun legislation, but then it kind of expanded towards all of the bad monkey business in mm-hmm. Salem there. So OregonPushback.com is a place to go and get involved. And I'm involved with that organization, and that they will be getting into actual elections in 2020. So look forward to that. If you want a way to get involved in that, that would be a big deal.
When you say they're getting involved in actual elections, they're going to be running candidates?
Not really. So one of the things that's on the docket is to do some radio commercials, as a matter of fact. So and other kinds of kind of actual political involvement. It might be in kind or third party kind of involvement. Uh-huh. But we have to start doing that. We have to start winning elections. You know, you brought up one thing about how all these truckers came to Salem and they gave up a day's wages to do that and paid some amount of money for the diesel to get here and stuff like that.
Yeah.
What if you took all that money, and that had to be $1 million or more or whatever. Yeah. And so what if you took all that money and said, maybe let's devote that money to the election in November and put $1 million here or there in some state legislative races. And you might do that, and you might not have to come to Salem and shake your fist or whatever. So, and we appreciate you coming to Salem shake your fist. But if we could turn that kind of enthusiasm during the session into enthusiasm during the election, that would make the difference there.
And the coalescing and unifying of sort of groups that may sometimes it's strange bedfellows in some of these things. In mm-hmm. this case, I don't think it is necessarily, except that you have people from kind of all walks of life and political ideologies really witnessing what they witnessed, which was a really gross overreach by a supermajority.
Yep.
This is what happens. Oregon is the case in point why you don't want this.
Yep.
Either side.
And if that's not good enough for you, just go look at California and you can kind of see the future of 5 or 10 years from now. So,
and we don't want that in this state.
No, we don't want that.
This is a beautiful state and you've got a lot of people who are really fearful and angry and upset. And I think it's on all of us to get engaged, to stop, you know, the social media banging on your keyboard, things like that. That has its place, but boots on the ground, getting involved, showing up at meetings, meeting other people that are like-minded to sort of, you know, fortify your resolve to get out there and do that, because it's all about who gets the most votes.
Yep. And another way you can get involved, you know, not everybody can grab a clipboard and go knock on doors and not everybody has a lot of talent, but just giving $25 to a candidate here and there makes all the difference. And the $25 gets added to a whole bunch of other $25. And I've seen that kind of grassroots money expand into real money and decisive money. So get involved doing that too.
Yeah. It's a good way. You know, even something small, if you don't have the bandwidth, you work full-time, you're full-time parent, whatever, you can't, every little bit helps.
Yep. It does. Yep.
Absolutely. All right.
We good? We have much time we have left? Because we could talk about this forever.
I know. We should probably take a quick break and come back and do a quick wrap up of what we've all been talking about.
Okay. There's a lot. A lot to unpack.
Been like a fire hose listening to you guys. Wednesdays with Denise Quinn. It's our first inaugural show with Denise Quinn and Representative Mike Nierman joining us here in studio on Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Hamblin's Nursery. Welcome back to Newsmakers and Wednesdays with Denise Quinn, as Brent has stepped away on Wednesdays now, but we'll be broadcasting live from the Marion County Fair tomorrow and on Friday for 2 hours. So it's going to be a two-hour Newsmakers, both Thursday and Friday.
Hopefully you'll have good weather, but it's always been under a canopy. Hopefully. It's going to be good. It's rainy kind of today.
I can't believe you just said that. You just cursed it.
Oh, no.
It's supposed to be partly sunny. It's 75. I'll take that.
You do know I control the weather.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, not to nice.
I own Dairy Queen and I control the weather.
And Mother Nature, that's what it is. Representative Mike Nierman, thank you for coming into the studio today.
Good, thanks for having me.
So, hey, you feel like doing a little prognosticating, a little predictions for the future? What?
Sure, as long as everybody knows, whenever you get predictions from me, you always get your money's worth, too. So.
Oh, good to know.
So let's talk about, okay, we got a little bit of a lull here, a little lull before the storm. Mm-hmm. You know, we've given people some good ideas, some concrete ideas on how they can get involved. But
first of all, let's talk about the February session. You want some prognostication on that.
Okay.
So we're gonna get a vaccine bill.
Yep.
Representative Mitch Greenlick is on his way out. He's going to be retiring. And so I think that's part of his swan song. So that was something.
That's like a legacy bill, right? That's going to be fought tooth and nail for again.
So look forward to that coming out. And then some sort of climate thing to take the place of 2020. That'll be coming in February. Mm-hmm. And then we had a very successful session with firearms that we, I don't know if they didn't push it or if they kind of overplayed their hand and couldn't get their stuff passed. They had the big omnibus bill. The number was Senate Bill 978 or something like that.
I think it was 978. Yeah.
And that was really big and kind of the Christmas time for Democrats there, and they couldn't get that passed.
Yeah.
And so expect some firearms bills to come back in February there. So that's my prediction for February. So
anybody thinking that we got a pass, we basically got a couple of months reprieve because we're going to be back at this again, fighting it again. And this time I'd like to really see us on the offense on these things. Yep. We know it's coming.
Yep.
And part of we need people in those seats that represent our values.
Yep.
What does that look like? In a number of years, you've had seats that have had no challengers from Republicans. Is that going to change this session? Are there any areas that look particularly good?
Yeah. So that's a great point. That if we have Republicans running for every seat, for all 60 seats, that helps us because they don't know where the challenge is coming from,
right.
And it could be someone who's just a kind of a token candidate or whatever. But it could be someone who's for real, and they don't know that until the money starts coming in and they don't get to look at our playbook. So it very much helps to have candidates in every single seat. In 2010, we did that. We had Republicans running, I think, in 59 of the 60 seats there, which was really helpful. And if we can do something like that again, that'll be helpful. That's kind of a little bit of a function of the national mood there. People get excited about what's going on nationally.
Right.
And maybe we have a little bit of a buoyancy from the Trump presidency or whatever that causes that to happen. So that would be very good to happen. There's a couple of regions that we need to play in. One of them is the coast. I think there's the coastal areas tend to be Democrats, but they tend to be Democrats that are natural resource extraction Democrats.
Yeah.
They're loggers, they're fishermen, things. And then the other industry that goes on the coast is tourism, and that tends to be kind of a get your hands dirty kind of thing. Those are our peeps too, I think. They're the working people that are really respond to our messaging and everything. So I think we have huge opportunities along all up and down the coast there, and then even curling on down the Columbia River there. Mm-hmm. So that's one area. The other area is Lane County. When you think of Lane County, you think, oh, no way, that's Eugene. That's big hippie liberals and everything like that. And so certainly the city of Eugene is very liberal, but the outlying areas aren't. And if you don't believe me, just go spend some time in Junction City or Cottage Grove or whatever.
Yeah.
And those are not really hippie towns. So so I think we have some opportunities in Lane County, too. So
also, you know, as far as resource spending, I mean, campaigns cost money. You want the other side to spend money and to do that. And so for too long, it almost seems like people have kind of shrugged their shoulders in some of these districts and go, well, we can't win. But that isn't necessarily the point. You can advance the ball down the field a little bit, make the other side spend a little bit of money, whatever, make it a competitive as much as you can race.
Yep. Make the other side spend money, or make the other side hold on to their money and not be able to donate it to the neighboring campaign or whatever. Or something.
And defend their votes.
Yep.
Because they need to be on the record defending some of these heinous votes that have been taken and what they do, and make them explain in public forums, to really have, again, the same people that were coming and testifying need to go to these candidate forums, need to go to town halls, need to start asking those same questions.
Right. Questions like, why did you support climate legislation that won't do anything to impact the climate and will do horrible things to the Oregon economy. Why would you support that kind of legislation? And let them defend that in front of everybody. You're right.
Yeah, and even in the, you know, the I-5 corridor, the big blue blobs that are down, including Salem, we need to be engaging in those and not be afraid to engage and to stand up and speak to our values and talk about what it is that matters to us, because these people, whether they're in R&D, represent us as well. They are our servants.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And they work for us. And it's high time we remind them of that.
Yep.
And that we start acting like that.
Yep.
Yeah, I'd like to see more of that as well.
You're holding me accountable right now, and I don't know if you noticed this, but here and there, I've been holding the voters accountable, too. And so we hold each other accountable.
Right. And that's, you know, that's been my mantra for a long time, that it is a relationship, just because, you know, you're not done when you cast that ballot. Your relationship with that person that you just put in office has just begun, whether it's representative from HD23, whether it's the city councilor, whether it's a school board member.
Yep.
You need to go, and you guys are not mind readers. You don't know if we don't tell you what's important to us, and we want you. You are there. That is, again, you know, we're a constitutional republic. Like, you represent us.
Yep.
And I wouldn't want you to assume anything.
Yeah. And far too often, I think that happens.
Or it does.
I keep hearing this, well, the voters decided how they want to go at the time of the election. Baloney. Baloney they did. Yeah. You can't, just because, you know, in some of these smaller races where you have very, very low voter turnout, it's like that 10% of the population decided, but that's not the entire populace. The conversation doesn't stop with the vote.
Yep.
It continues to go on. And so, first of all, number one, get involved and get out and vote. And number two, maintain that relationship and go to these town halls. And again, feet to the fire.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I love town halls.
Yeah. Town halls are fascinating. They really are fascinating. It's interesting to see the demographics. And a lot of times you don't see as many younger people showing up. And I'd like to engage to get that in there. I have a 27-year-old son who is an entrepreneur. And, you know, you want to speak to the younger generation about our... You don't want to show them a pie chart or a Gantt chart or whatever. You need to tell stories and explain why less government is better. How does that relate to you in your life when you're trying to start up your business?
Yep.
Do you have those conversations?
Yeah, I do. It's sad. It's almost like boiling the frog.
Yeah.
Because so many goodies are dangled out. And you want free health care. Do you want your student loan debt forgiven? All this kind of stuff. And that all of that is bigger government there. Yeah. But it looks good to some people. But
it sounds good. It sounds good to a lot of people. But they don't realize or take into account what it takes to make that happen.
Yeah.
And that's... everyone's money.
That's our job then, is to put flesh on those bones there and explain to them why that's bad.
Yeah. And to really to communicate those principles, you know, smaller government, if it doesn't, you know, pick my pocket and break my bones, I'm good with it. And to communicate those principles, I always recall, you know, your kid's first paycheck, and they look at it and go, who the heck is FICA?
Yeah,
and why is FICA taking all my money? Yeah. I don't like this.
And if that doesn't work, then we can maybe start a collection, and we can have like a scholarship opportunity in Venezuela.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Boy.
So they can go see big government, how it really ends up.
How big government really ends up. How socialism, the darling, you can have Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, really is not talking about socialism. Venezuela is socialism.
Yeah.
So I don't, whatever little hybrid thing she's talking about over here. But again, reaching out, engaging youth, young people, reaching out all across, because the principles, I think when you really sit down and talk to people, again, sphere of influence, this one-on-one, one-on-two conversation, what you can do when you talk to people in person is far more effective. Because when it really gets down to the nitty gritty of it, we have much, much more in common than we do that divides us.
Yeah.
We may look at the problems a little bit differently. We all recognize the problems. Nobody wants dirty air, dirty water. We all want those things. We all want good education and good health care. We just have a different way of getting to the solution. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of frightening that the fever pitch is so high with the rhetoric that we're becoming less and less able to talk to each other. So the one-on-one, I think, is much more important.
Or unable to see the results of where our policies go.
Yeah.
And socialism is a nice shiny object, but
give it 5 years.
Yeah, the end of the day, it's not working, and it started to not work in Oregon.
We don't want to be California. California is sadly the poster child for failed policies.
Can we build a wall at the southern border?
Sure.
Representative Mike Nierman, thank you so much for spending an hour with
us
today.
Good. Thanks, both of you.
On our inaugural Wednesdays with Denise Quinn here on Newsmakers. I felt it went rather well. It looked like a fire hose of information, but thank you.
There's so much to talk about. That's
there
the thing,
is.
Unfortunately. And you've got 1 hour, and it's hard to get it all in.
It is.
Like I said, we could talk for hours.
You'll be back next Wednesday. This is Newsmakers. We'll be live at the Marion County Fair tomorrow. See you then.
This has been Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.